Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. And they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Joining me, one of the great guests on this show, Drew Geyer of Rockpile Report. If you don't know him, you ought to have listened to the show at least once by now, but a character, to say the least. And I'm going to meet him in person, I hope, for the first time this weekend as we go up for the Bills game. But Drew, how are you doing?
I am fantastic, Ken. I'm, you know, just like the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs, I'm just happy to be here.
Let's talk about the state of the Bills. Of course, it's a long time since week four. Both the Bills and Ravens have changed a lot. I'm sure you're going to want to know what's different about the Ravens since then, which I'll give to your folks. Our fans already know what's different about that. But talk about the major changes for the Bills since week four.
The major changes that you've seen from the Buffalo Bills over the last, 16 weeks we're coming up on? It's maturity. You know, there's not a lot... Obviously, a lot of personnel changes from that game to the next. Our team was incredibly unhealthy, which has been uncharacteristic of the 2024 Buffalo Bills. They are one of the and remain one of the healthiest teams in the NFL in terms of man games lost, in terms of the amount of time that they've had to spend shuffling and churning the roster due to injuries. We've been relatively lucky in that regard. But in that one game, we were missing some real star power, and also not only missing star power, playing some players who still hadn't developed and become who they are now for the Buffalo Bills. And so in that way, I look at, you know, obviously the health of the team. Matt Milano coming back gets a lot of run. in the press right now. But also, addition by subtraction, Baylen Spector, it turns out he was a player we thought we could rely on as a rotational piece. Over the course of the early part of the season, turned out to be one of the worst run defenders on the entire team in any position. And so that kind of mitigates what you can offer the team as a backup linebacker. He's now on IR. He's no longer part of the picture. We've also kind of upgraded, you've shuffled your defensive core to figure out who your rotational defensive backs should be. And in that regard, you found out that some of the guys you were relying on in the last game, like Cam Lewis, who I believe he had 4 missed tackles in that game, led the team. I know that. He is now taking something of a backseat role. We have Teron Johnson back, who obviously everyone in your fan base certainly remembers Teron Johnson from the last divisional game here in Buffalo. But what you don't see is Jamarcus Ingram. Jamarcus Ingram was a depth player who the Bills were really trying to feature as a dime defensive back in their scheme. And over the course of the season, kind of figured out that he's not quite cut out for that role. And so now he's worked in kind of sparingly. They kind of pick and choose their spots with him, and they're much more judicious on what kind of downs they use him in. But that was a major transformation of the team. But by and large, it's maturity, not just of the roster, but also of the coaching staff. You know, our coordinators this season started really quickly and then hit some bumps in the road. And so with that, you've watched them grow over the course of the following 16 weeks to a point where I can confidently say after last week's game that both our offensive and defensive coordinator, for being first timers at this job, they're bringing their A game each and every week. And I think that when they're on, some of the wrinkles that they throw at our opponents, it's up there with some of the best to call plays in the game.
Oh, that is high praise indeed. Obviously, the acquisition of Amari Cooper on the offensive side of the ball in terms of the receiving core, how much of a difference has that made?
It's made a difference in the sense that there's now something else you have to think about. I know to our coach's frustration, Amari Cooper arrived here, was a little rusty in his first game, but caught a touchdown pass and then immediately injured his wrist. And it seems just the way they've treated him and the way that they've kind of managed it with practices and things like that, it strikes me as a Tyreek Hill situation where there's something significantly wrong and he's playing through it. It must be manageable, but at the same time, he's not 100%. And so you're watching him, you know, when you think about a player of Amari Cooper's caliber, I think it was just last season he had 1,000 yards for the Cleveland Browns as they were making that crazy playoff run. He is now playing right around 30% of our snaps because other wide receivers on the roster are a little bit younger, a little bit faster. And the run blocking component, that's how I know the wrist injury has to be meaningful, because he's not being relied on for a wide receiver with his pedigree as a run blocker and his physicality in the run game that he's had throughout his career. He's not being asked to do that on a regular basis. He's being put out there as a pure receiving threat. And when it comes time to do some of the dirty work, you find them turning more to a Mac Hollins. They're going more to Keon Coleman. And so in that way, Amari Cooper is giving opposing defenses food for thought, but he's not exactly the threat that his name would make you think he is.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, honestly, in his years in Cleveland, he wasn't that big a threat as we've seen him in the Ravens. The guy who was a big threat in the first game, and we certainly saw anyway flashes during that game, was Keon Coleman in terms of being a back shoulder threat on the left side against Brandon Stevens. And Stevens famously cannot get his head around to look at the football, which makes him a big target over there. He had gave up. The Ravens have been on a great run of not giving up. Holding their opponents to a yardage total that is below what their opportunity set provided by the pass rush would otherwise dictate. For 6 straight weeks, since week 11, they've been fantastic at that. They've been one of the best defenses in the NFL. Last week against the Steelers, it really showed up as some poor coverage problems. Talk about what Keon Coleman has done as a receiver this year and also the run blocking component that goes with this, because he's a really big guy.
He's a big guy who tracks the ball really well over his shoulder downfield. And as the season's progressed, he's really learned where kind of how Josh Allen throws the football and where he wants him to be in terms of body control when he does take those shots down the field. I mean, I think that one of the things that jumps off the page too, if you want to look at it statistically, Keon Coleman right now, for being a rookie, his targeted air yards, he's averaging 15.4 a game, right?
Like that's per throw. You mean
per throw? That's a significant departure from how most teams would handle rookies, right? They're saying, listen, we trust you to go down the field, and when we target you, we're going to throw to you deep. And he's also seventh in the NFL in yards after the catch per reception because of his physicality at the catch point. And the fact that his contact balance is so good that if he's down the field and you can get the ball in his hands, he's very difficult to bring down in between the catch point phase and then when he establishes himself as a runner on the field with the ball in his hands. Now, he's not a guy who's garnering double-digit targets a game. They're very judicious with how they pick when and where to take shots downfield to Keon Coleman. He's not a guy you're going to see operating around the line of scrimmage much. His routes are designed to take a defensive back down the field with him, typically pull a safety. And if you don't pull a safety and Josh sees that he's singled up in coverage, depending on the cornerback, depending on the situation, if he doesn't have a better option or there's not a guy who's clearly open, Josh likes to uncork one now and again just to see if he can steal a play. And Coleman's proven that between his body control and his catch radius, he can come up with a lot of downfield shots because his target numbers aren't great. He's 29 catches on 57 targets, but he's been able to produce when he gets those opportunities.
Right. I mean, 18.7 yards per reception is way up there. And a good percentage of that is yak. It's surprising to me that he's honestly been as good. I thought he'd be mainly a back shoulder guy. I didn't like him as much coming out of the draft as a lot of other people did. And it really looks like that might've been a mistake. I mean, there's some other guys up higher.
I will say this. I'm notorious in our fan base for my draft takes absolutely stink. Everything that I prognosticate, the opposite happens. You know, I liked Trey White, currently a Baltimore Raven. I thought Reuben Foster, the linebacker out of Alabama, was going to be such a better player. And I couldn't have been more resoundingly wrong. We did a live draft night show, and I said, because we went around the table and said, best case, worst case scenario. And I said, my worst case scenario is if you draft that slow wide receiver out of Florida State, Keon Coleman. Don't do it. And less than 2 minutes later, they announced he was the pick. And everyone started lighting us up with DMs about, oh, this guy's going to be great. He must be, because Drew doesn't like
him. Yeah, that's how it goes sometimes. We've had some big moments on the draft, but the fans of this show all know exactly what my draft thoughts were at the time and how pissed off I was. But the big table bang that I didn't get that ended up being a really good one was Derwin James. And the big one that I was pissed off about, literally, we're doing this panel discussion just like we're doing now. So we're recording the thing on StreamYard. We've got six panels going on, and they can see how upset I am with the Patrick Queen pick. And, you know, it's like 30 minutes have passed and you know, someone's telling me, you know, stiff it up, Ken. This is, it's going to be okay. You know, it turned out it wasn't, but yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, we all have those. And then there's sometimes where you're right and it's like, no, you guys don't understand. This isn't going to go well.
Yeah. And they don't want to hear it. They definitely don't want to hear it on draft night.
No, but so yeah, Keon Coleman's been really good. And then when you go down the wide receiver depth chart, I think the guy that you have to talk about is Khalil Shakir.
Yep.
Khalil Shakir, he's, for being a small guy, right? Not a big player whatsoever. He's putting up some ridiculous numbers. And like, I had to dig for some of these stats, but it was probably about 4 weeks ago when I checked it. Khalil Shakir was second in the entire NFL in yards after contact, including running backs. It was him and Ja'Marr Chase. And Ja'Marr Chase is, I mean, obviously a transcendent talent in the NFL. I believe it was like a fantasy football stats website, but at the time, Shakir was challenging for second in the NFL in yards after contact. And I found that fascinating, but it's not when you watch him play. He's very low to the ground. He has great contact balance, and he's almost built like a running back in the sense that he keeps his center of gravity low through contact after he catches the ball. So at first brush, he's incredibly difficult to bring down. This past week, he was featured against the Broncos less in the passing game and more as a punt returner. And sure enough, he had two electric punt returns because he's incredibly difficult to tackle at first brush. they've really found ways to weaponize that. We're going to talk about that in a little bit here in a minute, but Khalil Shakir is quietly our leading receiver, and it's not done with, you know, all of the pomp and circumstance that most teams' wide receiver one would get. And he doesn't draw the other team's best matchup every time because of his size and his usage and the fact that you're never going to run him on a deep post. You're never going to see him working this. I shouldn't say never, but rarely working the sideline. He is a threat in between the hashes, and he's a special talent in that way that he's able to manufacture some really big plays from seemingly nothing.
Okay. So he's got 8.73, yards per target. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's obviously, it's good, but it's not an elite level. That's good. It's definitely good though. Especially particularly for a slot receiver, he's got 8.0 yards after the catch. And you have some other way you get yards after contact for a receiver?
I believe it was I think it was a fantasy football. I thought was it Fantasy Pros or something that had that had the stat, because I was digging forever to find it, because I'm watching these games. Ken, where they'll use him is they'll take him around the line of scrimmage and they'll throw to him knowing he's in traffic, but they trust his hands more than anybody else's on the entire roster. Mm-hmm. When they need a catch to a satellite receiver that they think can rip off chunk yardage based on how they've set up the rest of the offense, Khalil Shakir is the first read. And when you get the ball in his hands quickly, he gears up to speed so fast that he gets on linebackers and he gets on that slot corner so quickly that it's almost impossible to stop him from getting 3 yards to 5 yards. And when you can do that, that's almost as good as the best running play that you might have in your book, unless you have a guy like Derrick Henry.
Right. So 23 missed tackles. Obviously, he's more of an elusive tackle misser, it looks like. The thing I wanted to get to, you mentioned around the line of scrimmage. When I see a yak number like that, that's at 8.0, and a yards per target number that's 8.8, I'm thinking this is a guy who does a lot of jet motion tosses and a lot of wide receiver screens, among some other things, no doubt, too.
Yep. Nope. Okay. It's a lot of short game, and it's a lot of things around the line of scrimmage, or what they'll do is they'll run a shallow, like, in-breaking route behind a group of other receivers that are all kind of running clearing routes for him. Mm-hmm. And it just gives him a little space to, you know, let's say it's, you know, a perfect example would be if you're working with second and six, they're going to run a couple routes about 10 yards downfield just to draw a little bit of attention away. And he's going to be Josh's first read, and it's going to be a quick throw to Shakir. They know he can get that six, but all it takes is one guy to miss something or not take the right angle. And that could turn into 10. It could turn into 15. If you go back to the game against the Rams, I shouldn't say a relatively harmless pass, but there's a pass a little bit farther downfield to Shakir, but he's so quick that the safety misplays it. The cornerback thinks the safety has it, so he's not running full speed, and he splits both defenders and takes it for a touchdown. And I think that ended up being like a 40-yard play that probably should have been stopped about 15 to 18 yards downfield.
All right. Let's flip it over to the offensive line now. I guess we'll stay on offense for a minute. Give us the health of the unit overall. Obviously, James Cook has had a big year. The Buffalo offensive line is one of the better ones in the NFL. Tell us about it across from left to right.
From left to right, Deion Dawkins is playing the best football of his entire career. That's why he's a Pro Bowler, but it's hard to be a Pro Bowler when you're a Buffalo Bill. I keep trying to tell people this. Like in a contest where it's who do you know, name recognition, it is hard to get your name out there when you're a Buffalo Bill. Deion Dawkins is very visible. He's very much in the public eye, but he's also playing the best football of his entire career. And so with that in mind, he has been lights out, and he is a scrapper. He can handle power rushers. He can handle speed rushers. He wins with not only size and power, but also technique. And I think that that's such an underrated part of any great tackles game. It's just, I don't have to be bigger or more physical than you if I have better technique. And we've watched him over the course of this season use something he calls the ice pick, which is essentially, I don't even know how it's legal. It's a literal karate chop to the defender's hands while they're trying to come in and get their anchor. But it's in a downward sweeping motion to where he's not holding you. It's borderline cheating. He's sweeping downwards, knocks the defender's hands out, takes their own momentum and uses that to kind of run them off balance, and then just discards them. as pass rushers, and he's been doing it all season. We've watched him do it to the Rams' Jared Verse, who just had himself a really big game on last night in the playoffs, who's had a great season for them. I believe he's a rookie, if I'm not. Some of the more tenured pass rushers have really struggled with Dawkins this year. Similarly, on the other side, if I just want to bookend this, Spencer Brown, playing some of the best football of his entire career at right tackle. And one of the things that we've always loved about his game, but we're seeing it now in spades, is that his athleticism for a guy his size who can play right tackle has been a boon to this offense, because now you can do a lot of things out in space. Both of our tackles pull a lot in the rushing attack. They are incredibly important to this rushing attack that James Cook is kind of, they've put James Cook on their shoulders this year, and a lot of it comes down to the athleticism. And also, there's just some big and nasty to Spencer Brown. I like him against most speed rushers. You have to be pretty special in order to get him consistently. And if you play more of a power rushing game, you're not going to bull rush Spencer Brown very often. I think one of the biggest changes from the Buffalo Bills from week four to this week is the interior line. Ken, last time we got together and did this, you made a point of pointing out that our center was playing some of the worst football in the NFL. If you recall that. And right now he's actually improved his scoring and all of his, his metrics, but that's the hole was pretty deep. He's dug himself out of that and has actually had some really great tape over the last month and a half of football. And that has solidified the guard play on either side of him. And right now the interior offensive line is probably as stout as it's been all year.
It'll definitely be a major component of the battle this week. Let's go back to Brown for a second, because one thing he's certifiably done has been penalized very frequently. 9 times he's had a penalty that's declinable, which to me as an offensive line scoring guy is a horrible sin. Mm-hmm. To do that. What's been the cause of that? Because he's been a pretty good pass blocker this year overall, but what's been the problem with his penalties?
The issue with Spencer Brown, if you're going to call it an issue, for me, it's one of those things of when you draft a player and you get to know what a player's makeup is, there are some things you have to accept. When it comes to Spencer Brown, he plays with a visible edge. If you watch him for 4 quarters, you will see him do some things over the course of a game where you're shocked he didn't get penalized. Mm-hmm. He plays a very aggressive game. I would call it nasty, and I like it because you need some of that, especially if you're going to play a team like the Baltimore Ravens. You have to be able to match their intensity and their physicality. He has been known to play a little bit overly physical sometimes, and his footwork is good, but it's not the best. And so where he gets himself in trouble is when speed rushers do get the edge on him, he's not going to allow them to win cleanly. I think his mentality is, I would rather take a flag and keep Josh upright and prevent you from forcing a fumble or from making contact with my quarterback. I'll just bury you and take the flag if the referee's watching me.
Okay.
And so if Spencer Brown's your tackle, you go into every game going, okay, he's going to do 2 things today that are going to really, I'm going to watch him and put my hands on my head. Hopefully the refs don't see it. And if they do, I just have to live with that, because otherwise he's a really talented player.
All right. So the center that's Connor McGovern, who's played center for most of the year. Mm-hmm. Now. Okay.
Yep.
And Osiris Torrance, is he the weak link now on the line at this point?
Weak link they're playing well. I think if I had to say weak link, yes, if only because of his youth and because he's just not the athlete the rest of the guys are. Mm-hmm. For what it's worth, David Edwards, he's a Super Bowl champion. He's got a ring. He played, I believe it was center for the Rams when they beat the Bengals a few years ago. He plays with the requisite physicality, and I think it took him some time to really gel as a starter in our offense. And early on in the season, he had struggles. There was games where you saw multiple pressures allowed. There was a couple games where between him and Torrance, they both combined to allow sacks. Now they're playing a game where, we go up against the Denver Broncos, who just broke their franchise record for sacks in a single season. And it was 8 pressures. Most of it was kept to the outside. give Josh Allen time to step up in the pocket. He had a clean pocket to step into. The only sack that was taken, it was just a really great play by defensive tackle Zach Allen, who's pretty good for Denver. And he just beat Edwards clean, and you're going to have that in the NFL, especially when you're paying the guy $3 million and he's been a journeyman since he won a ring. But I've been really happy with his play, David Edwards. Torrence is probably the weak link, and I think a part of that's just how we use him. We pass a lot. And in those passing situations, pass pro has never been, was never going to be a strong part of his game. He's adequate at it. It's in the running game where Torrence really shines. And I think that he gets hidden when we get a lead, and then the team can just really hone in on the running game and kind of protect him from his own inadequacies.
If you're talking to Ravens fans and explaining how the Buffalo Bills run game is going to beat a Ravens defense, which has been very stout against the run. And how would you say they will try and do it?
I think it's going to be a combination of two things. It's going to be James Cook out in space. I think that there's an understanding trying to run up the middle of the Ravens defense is not a recipe for success. You know, you can do it, but I don't think it's going to yield a lot of positive results, a lot of not negative plays, but a lot of plays you're probably going to wish you had tried something else. Like, I know that the middle of your defense is very stout. I saw the tweet about your defensive tackle and the team was calling him CB1 because he had that interception. Oh, yeah. I love me some big one tech defensive linemen. I really do. And I think that you guys have a great D line. And so in that way, I have a feeling the Bills are going to stay away from that. I see a lot of outside zone running. I see them pulling guards to the edges of the defense and trying to roll up on your linebackers and just hoping that they can seal things off well enough inside that Medibike and guys like that aren't in there running things down from the backside. Because if you can do that, I think that's how you're going to have to try to manufacture rushing yards. I mean, you're the savant when it comes to the stout interior defensive line, but I just feel like that's a bad matchup. If you look at it on paper, the Bills interior line trying to impose their will on your front seven, it just doesn't seem like a good idea.
One of the things we've seen in the past from the Bills in matchups against the Ravens is a willingness to put an extra OL6 on the field. And that hasn't, I don't think that's been particularly effective. And that's purely at a looking at it and saying, this doesn't make sense that this would work given how it gives the Ravens a free opportunity to go to base defense in this case and get a lot bigger and tougher. What's your feeling? Have they been using OL6 as much?
They have. Alec Anderson actually has a pretty significant role on the team, but it's not their, they go back and forth. It's all situational, but they're very comfortable putting Alec Anderson on the field and then utilizing him when they think, okay, we'd rather not have a tight end and we know we're not throwing it. But even then, what they'll do is they'll put three wide receivers on the field. And this is an interesting wrinkle here. It's not in your notes, but it's something that makes this offense incredibly dangerous. And it's...
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance, but if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride, prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks. Plus, you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I talked about the maturity of our offensive coordinator. The last time we played, he had talented players, and what he had been doing was working. We were 3-0. So he's just going back to what he knows. And I think that that 2-game losing streak where we didn't just lose, like we kind of got embarrassed when it came to our offense for 2 consecutive weeks. I mean, we lose to you guys and we score 10 points, and he calls it a disastrous trick play. Like that's when I say maturity. He's now learned when and where, and the when and where for that kind of play is almost never. Our coach came out in the post game after that game, and when the media asked him about it, he said, "Oh, no, that's a thing we're going to talk about, you know, between the coaching staff and I." And he said it with the air of a parent who lent their car to a teenager, and then they brought it back with a dented fender. And he was like, okay, I guess we have to talk about this. I didn't think I needed to address this with you. Since then, he's developed an attack for the Bills that's gotten right back to where they started this season in terms of scoring and in terms of being able to manufacture yardage, even when things are tough. And one of the things that he's been doing is these 3x1 and 4x1 sets. 3x1, specifically if you bring out a 6th offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. He gets these dirty bunch formations together on one side of the field, puts Alec Anderson on the other side of the field, and then in there, there's motion. There's motion from the wide receivers, usually pre-snap just to help identify, but also to manipulate the linebacker level of the opposing defense. And then post-snap, it's basically you've already put the defense in conflict, and they're happy to run out of these formations. So a perfect example is the play that the Curtis Samuel scores a long touchdown against the Broncos this past week. It's a 4x1 set. They bring Khalil Shakir on almost like you had mentioned jet motion earlier. They bring Khalil Shakir around like it could be jet motion. Now, you've got all of these players bunched on one side of the field, on Josh's left. So
let me ask you the question, first of all, about what you mean by 4x1 set. No back, empty backfield, one receiver one side, 4 standing on the other.
So you have what you have is like, so for this specific play, it was, I guess it was tight end. So you've got your tight end in Dalton Kincaid. You've got 3 wide receivers, all kind of up, but off the line of scrimmage. Like there's one line wide receiver on the line, mm-hmm. and everybody else kind of filling in behind him and almost like what looks like a diamond formation.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then before the snap, you've got a running back in the backfield. Khalil Shakir comes across the back end of the formation. Almost seems like was it Khalil Shakir? Somebody comes across. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm going to make a liar out of myself. But they come across the backside of the formation, and before they get to Josh, the ball gets snapped. He's in the shotgun. The problem is now all of your defenders are kind of already sucked to one side of the field. And then what you end up running is a very simple concept out of that. It's almost like a levels concept out of it. But the problem is that pre-snap against the defense that's playing man, everybody's now trying to communicate who has who. Whose responsibility is this and is that? And somehow Pat Surtain ends up 2.5 steps behind Curtis Samuel. And that turns into a 55-yard touchdown pass because even though in a vacuum, Curtis Samuel has no business beating Pat Surtain like that, the funky alignment pre-snap combined with the fact that the pre-snap motion drew the eyes at the linebacker level, there was nobody who was going to run and carry with him. And the defensive backs are already a step behind.
Okay.
And so they use a lot of this. And then, oh, by the way, if they line up in a 3-wide receiver formation and it's offset and Alec Anderson is in the game, they will run out of that formation too. They'll stack everyone to one side and see if you come out, depending on what the defense comes out in. If they decide to stay home, nobody decides to adjust to the alignment of the wide receivers, you'll watch Josh audible at the line of scrimmage and he'll change the play. And then they'll shift a guy over and then they'll go 2-by-1. You know, 2 to the left, 1 to the right, or they'll go into a more orthodox formation. But they'll come out in this and try to see, are you going to try to match up with them personnel to personnel? Or are you going to stay home and just play a zone? Because if that's the case, we'll run the ball. That's fine. We're comfortable doing that. And it's been interesting to see how he's used that specific set of formations to really dictate play to the defense, because they're saying, look, if you don't respond to this, it's a problem.
Well, I will say that back in week 1, the Ravens had a lot of trouble with Mahomes taking advantage of bunch formations and in particular spotting up a receiver on a linebacker. And that's one of the big problems with Orr early on, is that he was not able to react to that with some sort of response that would work. And a lot of people suggested that the one that would have been good was putting a larger linebacker, even an edge defender, on somebody coming out of that bunch formation and just knock him backwards. Because you get your free shot within 5 yards, you might as well mess up the timing of the play there.
It's not a terrible idea.
Yeah. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball here. And I know we're running a little bit behind here. The return of Matt Milano, the return of Terrell Bernard certainly solidifies the linebacking core a little bit. Milano doesn't look like he's played that great since he's got back. And I'll ask my question here in just a second. Is it more the addition by subtraction of getting rid of the player you were talking about earlier? Baylen Specter. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the defense as a whole got better as they got healthier. Terrell Bernard being back obviously helps. He's our middle linebacker. He's the play caller. And honestly, Matt Milano gets a lot of shine because of his playmaking ability and the splash plays that he makes. I mean, he's an all pro. So he's obviously very good at his job. Terrell Bernard is very impressive. He's not going to get the national attention. He's not going to win All-Pro, Pro Bowl, but he's a very cerebral linebacker. Now, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but that makes him more adept at what Sean McDermott wants his linebacker core doing anyway, which is covering, but also coming in on the blitz, delayed blitzing scenarios. They love to threaten the A and B gap and just basically walk them to the line of scrimmage, trusting the athleticism of their linebackers that they can bail out of it and still get to their coverage spots. And, you know, we watched them give Bo Nix fits with that this past week. And so the return of Matt Milano has brought some interesting conversation. You know, Sean McDermott, our coach, was asked about it 2 weeks ago, and he had to make a comment that they were in wait and see mode. Because Matt Milano had a lot of rust to knock off. You figure he hasn't played in almost 2 years. So with that in mind, he also doesn't have a lot of time on task with Terrell Bernard. And I think that more so than just his own personal rust, is where this linebacker core is vulnerable. They're still developing chemistry. Because Terrell Bernard, your listeners may not know it, he just became a starter last year. He played 5 games with Matt Milano, who was then lost for the year with his broken leg. Right. Matt Milano comes back this year. They start working out in training camp. Matt Milano immediately tears his bicep, like one of the first couple weeks of training camp. And so now there's no more time on task together. Enter Dorian Williams, who is still very green, but learning and he's gotten much better specifically against the run. He's never going to be a good coverage linebacker, but he's a very freakish athlete, and he plays with a lot of speed and a lot of aggressiveness, and that makes him very good against the run. So as an early down, or like if you wanted to go to a three linebacker set, which the Bills don't do a ton, but he would make for a good Sam, a very athletic Sam linebacker if you wanted that kind of thing. The coach had to admit that they weren't sure who they were going to start in the playoffs. And they said, listen, that's why Matt Milano was still playing into that final game of the season, because he said, look, we need to see who's going to be the best next to Terrell Bernard. We need to know that there's chemistry here, because if there's not, then we can't risk putting Matt Milano out there in the field against an offense that's scoring 30 points a game in the Broncos or whoever, or God forbid we end up playing the Bengals, another team that could victimize you at the second level. And so it's been interesting to watch his return. He's not putting up stats, but he's getting better every week. And in this week, and this might be of interest to your listeners, our defensive coordinator there was almost an admission that, okay, we can't trust Matt Milano to be all pro Matt Milano that we saw in the past. This happened because in downs where you're used to seeing Matt Milano being the dime backer. Instead, what they did was they took a defensive lineman, Dwayne Smoot, who would usually come in and play defensive tackle. You know, he's defensive end, but he's a bigger defensive end. And they would rotate him in usually to play like sort of next to Ed Oliver as a dual three tech look. Mm-hmm. They were bringing Matt Milano down to the line of scrimmage, kind of to spy the quarterback, act as a pass rusher, also
simulated pressure.
And in that capacity, Milano really thrived. He could, you know, he helped hem in Nix's legs in a number of occasions. At the same time, he wasn't being asked to drop deep into coverage, and he wasn't being asked to be a part of those third down and long coverage responsibilities. And I found that very telling of what they think of Matt Milano right now.
All right. Well, let's talk. Last thing I really want to hit on is the defensive line and their size and ability to move. Obviously, this is a game where there'll be some wind. There'll be some weather conditions that aren't ideal. And it's probably a game where the Ravens will need to win the line of scrimmage. The defensive line size relatively concern you at all? The Bills do have a couple of big guys, I know, but they're not generally an enormous defensive line by today's NFL standards.
This is going to be the thing that keeps me awake at night all week ahead of this game. This defensive line is not the most physical, and it's not the stoutest. You know, we brought back Taquan Jones as a one tech, and he has struggled this year. Ed Oliver's never been known for being stout at the point of attack. His pass rush is probably the best part of what he does as a three tech defensive tackle. Behind him, Austin Johnson is a body. He's a player who's here, but if it wasn't him, it could be anybody, and I wouldn't know the difference. He's a highly unremarkable NFL player. One of the things I find interesting is that last week the Bills did sign Eli Onku, a guy who's been kind of on and off the roster over the years, back to the practice squad. A part of me wonders if they're not going to have him as another one-tech option available for this game. I would hope they'd be considering it, because they're going to need some beef on the interior here, because the other option we have at our disposal is Dwayne Carter. Dwayne Carter's a player, third rounder out of Duke. He's playing really good football. I also think he's hit something of a rookie wall, which there's no shame in that, especially as a third round pick. But it's telling that he was inactive last week, but healthy. Oh, and geez. So with that said, you're a rookie. It's a playoff game. You haven't done enough to earn Sean McDermott's trust. He's known for shutting down younger players if he doesn't feel like they're ready for the moment. And so in that way, I really worry about this defensive tackle group, because they do have the ability to get bullied. At defensive end, I've got Greg Rousseau, who might be one of the NFL's best edge setters as a 4-3, like a true 4-3 defensive end. He's not going to give you a lot of juice in the pass rush, though. And it's telling that he, statistically, is one of our team's best pass rushers. He's, I would say, top 25, 30 edge rushers in the league, but I wouldn't put him in the top 10 category. He's not a player that you're going to necessarily scheme for. Right. If from a pass rush perspective.
Line up usually left or right in his case.
I believe he lines up primarily off the right tackle's shoulder.
Okay.
And then you've got Von Miller. Von Miller, now I did notice that in the Broncos game, they were moving Von more to the right tackle, and he and Greg were kind of trading spots. Von is old. No offense, Ken, but Von is an old man. And while he's out there and he's giving it his all, I struggle with what he is for this roster because he's now just a pass rush specialist. And the guys behind him on the roster, I think they wanted more from. I think they thought A.J. Epenesa would take another step forward this season, which is why they gave him a two-year bridge deal. That hasn't really materialized. He's had some flashes, but by and large, he's very malleable in the run game, and he's not consistent as a pass rusher. He's another guy who's just like our D tackles, just kind of out there. and it concerns me. Dwayne Smoot, great depth option who they rotated. They reduced down inside. They'll bring him in as an extra pass rusher on the interior. He's a little bit big for just like a true, like in terms of broad and just how thick he is. He kind of fits the mold of a player you can rotate between edge and tackle. But at the same time, he's not special at either. He just kind of exists. And I think it's almost because AJ Epenesa is so unremarkable and because of Von Miller's age, Smoot has a place on this roster. Otherwise, I don't think he'd be here.
It looks like Ed Oliver plays maybe 64, 65% of the snaps, but nobody else pays even 40% of the snaps from what I can see.
No.
Okay.
No, they rotate pretty much everybody. Just trying to keep, I think it's more of, I think the philosophy for our defensive line is just to keep everybody as fresh as possible. And that will hopefully pay dividends where their natural talent just can't.
Okay. Do they normally activate 5 or 6 per game?
That's a good question. You know, when I,
or
when
even 4, a lot of teams do 4. The Ravens just frustrate the hell out of me by doing 4 regularly.
Yeah. I was going to say, I want to say that they probably, a part of me wants to say 5. If I take a look back here. So if I go and I look at the wild card game and I look at our defensive stats, I see that we had Ed Oliver who played 81% of the snaps. And then from there, it was Daquan Jones, Jordan Phillips, Austin Johnson. Yeah. So we had 4 defensive tackles active. And then Dwayne Smoot who rotates inside. Bills game day roster there inactive, D tackle, 2 D tackles inactive. So it seems more like they're skewing towards 4 over the last couple of weeks. But then because they have Dwayne Smoot, they feel like in certain pass rush situations between him and Jordan Phillips, they can use them on the interior. I'll be interested to see if this week it's not a pass rusher on the interior. Like I said, I think Eli Ankou has a really good chance to play just because of his size and the fact that he probably might be one of the more effective one tech just anchors that you can plug into the middle of that defensive line and maybe help stem the tide of what's going to be a big push by the Ravens to bully us on the interior of the front 7.
Okay. Well, like the Ravens, the Bills hardly had to play any defensive snaps this last week. Ravens had 44 excluding a kneel. It looks like the Bills had even fewer than that. So that's an impressive lopsided game in terms of holding onto the football. Okay. So two more things I want to talk about really quickly. Mm-hmm. The weather for Sunday, what can you tell us for Baltimore fans that might be headed to the game or just are watching it?
It's going to be cold. Bundle up. The thing about a cold football game is that it drains your energy so much faster than, you know, snow in and of itself is, snow is bad. It's bad for your footing. It's bad for, there's a lot of things having a snowy game can act as a detriment for various types of offense, certain play calls or play designs that you want to try to get into as an offense or certain things you want to be able to do as a defense. When you're talking about not just snow, but just bitter, bitter cold, the ball is a little bit harder. The ground is harder. Everything that you normally do becomes more difficult and your body fatigues at a much higher rate. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that in some of the cold games, you just watch guys, it just eats them up. And by the fourth quarter, you see whose conditioning is what. And especially among defensive linemen, which is why this matchup scares me with the weather, because I'm looking at a game where it's going to be 10 degrees by the time the ball gets kicked off, right? When the sun goes down, it's going to be about 10 degrees in Buffalo. It'll probably decrease down to about 7 or 8 by the time the game's really into full swing. Light chance of snow, not wind a chill. Ton of wind chill. So that's the other thing. They say that there's going to be 9-mile-an-hour winds. Right hand to God, I've been tailgating outside this building for the last 15 years, 20 years of my life, and I can tell you that there has never been a day where there's 10-mile-an-hour winds. If they say 10, it's 15. If they say 15, it's 20. There's a reason that Ben Albright had this. I don't want to steal it from him. After the Broncos kicker missed a game-tying field goal at the end of the first half last week, Ben Albright put out a stat. No opposing kicker has ever hit a 50-yard or longer field goal in Buffalo in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Ever. And that's because of the building. It's because of where we are. It's because this time of year, there is no such thing as no wind. It just doesn't exist.
And you made the point, I think last time we talked, that Buffalo is, with open eyes and open arms, building another open stadium to make sure that they retain that home field advantage.
Yeah. And for people who are, I understand being upset about it. Trust me, I'm out there freezing every single playoff run, every single January. I've been out there. I did it during the drought when we weren't winners. I was just out there, you know, that was liquid courage keeping me out there. But really it is an advantage because you're talking about a team coming in here who, I don't know what you think of the Ravens passing game. Obviously we're going to talk more about that on my show with you, but I do know that for a team that wants to run the ball, but also runs the ball so that the threat of the pass is more dynamic when they do decide to turn to it. When you're in bad weather like that, and the ball does become a little bit harder to catch, and the hands aren't quite as nimble as you'd maybe like them to be, and there's a lot of that going on over the course of four quarters, it almost makes that trench game become the game. And it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, for a team like Buffalo, you'd like to think, okay, our secondary, our coverage units are pretty good, but our third down metrics have been awful. If we can make the Ravens a little more one-dimensional than they usually are, maybe that is a boon to Buffalo. At the same time, if you guys come out and just punch us in the face repeatedly with the run and we can't stop it, now you're talking about a nightmare scenario because those same dynamics I'm describing also are going to be affecting the Buffalo Bills receivers.
Probably a little less of effect on Allen, I would think, in terms of his ability to throw the football. Flacco was a wonderful wind-resistant quarterback in terms of that, and that makes one of the things that made him so effective in January. That's one of the things I really fear for Lamar is that our passing game gets degraded more quickly with poor weather conditions.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one more question, then we'll call it. Pick a player on each side of the ball you think matches up well against the Ravens.
I think Teron Johnson matches up really well with the Ravens because he's a really good coverage player, right? Like he's really savvy in his coverage kind of around the line of scrimmage, and that's something that the Ravens do in spades. And you go back to the last time that they played the Buffalo Bills, and I've got Lamar's passing chart up here. The majority of his yardage was churned out within the first 10 yards of the line of scrimmage and behind the line. And that's okay because you guys were running away with the game. We were selling out to stop the run. So slip screens and things of that nature were working. I'd like to think if I had Teron Johnson in that game, a few of those wouldn't have worked as well because he's really adept at sniffing that out pre-snap, in phase, kind of understanding how to flow to the football and how to be there, and in coverage, reading the quarterback's eyes and knowing where to be in order to get into passing lanes and either buy his pass rush time or create turnovers. Again, something your fan base probably remembers. Now, on the other side of the ball, I really do think this is a game where Khalil Shakir is a matchup problem for the Ravens, because when you go down the one, your cornerbacks are going to have to deal with Keon Coleman and Mac Hollins and Amari Cooper, your CB1, CB2, your boundary threats there, your boundary covermen are going to have to deal with our boundary threats. And then I look at what goes on in the interior and I look down the list of Ravens DBs and coverage guys. And I go, here is a player in Khalil Shakir who can create chunk yardage. And if you're not adept at getting your hands around that, he can get away from you and he can create splash plays. he can keep the chains moving, which I think is how the Bills kind of have to win this game. It's going to be, I don't foresee a lot of four or five play down the field scoring drives. I think it's going to take 7, 8, 9 play drives, and you're going to need to turn to a guy like Khalil Shakir, who is just a matchup problem for guys who, for a team that has the ability to take your best cover men away from the play and then say, okay, I need your linebacker in space to go get this guy who's incredibly shifty, doesn't go down at first contact. And, oh, by the way, his speed when he gets up to second gear, it's nothing to sniff at. I really think he's a matchup problem, and I like both of those guys against you this weekend.
Great choices. Drew, always a pleasure to talk football with you. Thanks for coming on. Tell folks where they can find your work online and how they can follow you on Twitter.
Well, we're over there at the Rock at Rock Pile Report on Twitter, and we do a weekly live show on YouTube. We have our podcast. We do an AFC East Roundup podcast every week where for the last couple of years, I've just gotten to bring on other guests from the other franchises and heckle them, which has been fun. And we drink beer and we make fun of things and we...
I was noticing it seems to be a Diet Coke in front of you today.
Oh, no, that's a Sleeman's. It's from Canada.
Okay, very good. Now that my confidence is restored. Okay,
so. Yeah, we are our moniker is the hardest drinking, pettiest Bills podcast. I'd like to think that we're rather intelligent. At the same time, we have fun.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, please share this podcast with a friend. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. And if you have an idea for a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Drew, thanks again for coming on.
Yes, sir.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.